This is Jason Harp. Today is Friday, April the 9th, 2004. I am conducting a phone interview with former Charlotte City Council member John Thrower for Dr. Karen Flint's oral history and memory class.
Well, we'll go ahead and start. I do appreciate you allowing me to go ahead and do this, but I guess what we can start out with is...
Where are you, in Lincolnton?
Yeah, I'm in Lincolnton right now.
Is that long distance?
Oh, no, it's fine.
Okay.
It's not a problem at all. Where exactly were you born?
Charlotte.
Okay. Where did you go to school in Charlotte?
The local public school.
Okay.
I went to Dilworth, A.G., Alexander Graham,
mm-hmm.
and Central.
Central High.
Mm-hmm.
What year, what day and year were you born?
I was born in 28.
Okay.
And I graduated in 46.
Okay. Now, was your family originally from Charlotte?
Yes.
Okay. Born and raised, huh?
No, they weren't born here, but
oh.
They had been here for many years.
Okay. Well, what did anyone in your family ever run for political office other than your...
Yeah, strangely enough, my daddy ran for city council.
Oh, really?
Many years ago, yeah. And he somehow didn't make it, and... When I ran, he kind of looked at me funny, you know, like you're not a member of one of the inside people, you know.
Oh, is that right?
And I said, well, yeah, it's a long shot, but I'm just sick and tired, being sick and tired. And
what did he mean by one of those inside people?
That I didn't. I joined the JCs, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they did was put me on a gambling wheel,
mm-hmm.
raising money for one of the guys in JC's that was running for the national office. And it was just a plain gambling. That's all it was.
Oh.
And I resigned. You know, I said, this is not why I joined the JC's. And... I wasn't a member of a country club, I wasn't a member of the city club, I wasn't a member of the Chamber of Commerce or, you know, any support group, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So
what would you say motivated you to run for city council?
I was in the county, actually, when I built my house, and a year and a half later, I was in the city. They annexed me.
Mm-hmm.
And raise the double our taxes. And I just wanted to see where my money was going,
mm-hmm.
to be honest.
Did you have any folks that were friends of yours that encouraged you to run as well?
Not really, no. Uh-uh. I went to work for a dime store for McClellan's. You probably never heard of them.
Hmm.
And they had about 250 stores. I was in a training program, and I missed the Second World War by about a year, and I was 17 when they stopped drafting.
Hmm.
And then the Korean War came along, and I was in my fourth year and last year of training, and bang. I get a draft notice. So I tried to join the Navy or the Air Force. I didn't want to be a soldier. And they said, you can't. If they mailed the draft notice, then technically you're drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy pulled me aside, a chief petty officer pulled me aside and said, let me tell you something. If you go to your draft board and get a deferment for a week, for the purpose of joining the Navy, I'll take you in. So I did that. I was in Albemarle,
mm-hmm.
At the time I registered with McClellan's in Albemarle. And it so happened the mayor, who was a friend of mine there, was chairman of the draft board. So I called him and told him the situation. And I was 22 at the time. And he said, certainly, I'll give you the extension. And I went up there and got it and brought it back. excuse me, and took it back down there to the Shaw Post Office. And 2.5 years later, we came back home.
Mm-hmm.
We went to boot camp, and they didn't give us leave, and sent me to the Philippines, and put me in charge of the Navy Exchange, the ship store, really, there. And I ran that for 2 years. So, that's the trouble with two telephones. Hold just 1 second.
Okay.
Hello?
Hey. Hey, I'm on the other phone. You know, you're in the yard, cutting the grass. Would you come back in a few minutes, 30 minutes?
So, you know, you're right in your prime at 22.
Exactly.
And they put me in running the store. I said, good gosh, you know, here I'm a seaman running the Navy Exchange. And they said, well, we'll pay you extra. So they paid me the equivalent of a chief petty officer, which was, you know, as high as they could.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there for 2 years, and then I was on a carrier after that running the Navy, the ship store. Got out in 56. No, I'm sorry. Got out in 54. Went in 50. And went to the little theater and was acting in some plays. And my wife, who I had been in junior high and high with, was in one of the plays, and she jilted me in the play. I didn't like it, so I married her. But that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about Brooklyn. Tell me about, well, I guess we should start back with, when did you become a council member?
In 1961. I was in 61 to 71, and I took a 2-year hiatus from 60. I was in the terms, and I quit. I just, you know, I was trying to run a business, and it's very hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just started the business in 57. So I stayed on until 67, and then I got off and ran again in 69. I missed it. And
what did you miss?
Just the hubbub. You know, you are somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, when you get off, you're nobody. Really, I mean literally.
Yeah.
So,
well, what did you know of Brooklyn before you got on the city council?
I passed it practically every day going to Central High School. I grew up in Dilworth.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go, back then we didn't have buses. You got to school during the war the best way you could. And that was going down McDowell and walking, you know. If you got a ride, then you were just that much better off, but it was the gas war.
Mm-hmm.
The,
ration.
Ration. And, so that was it.
Well, what did you see when you, McDowell, what was on that side of Brooklyn?
Well, you didn't see a lot, actually, on McDowell. Wait, 1 second. And
Mara, did she call you back? Mara?
No, not Mara.
Laura.
And then David Jordan
called her.
Anyway. But back then, the black people were a lot more African Americans, or whatever you want to say, were a lot more subdued when it came to white people.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't walk in front of you and things like that deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
However, from Brooklyn, that would be
So it's Blue Heaven was actually in Brooklyn.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And when you and I talked about the urban renewal and urban redevelopment, some of the sections could be redone.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, Third Ward, places like that, the houses were built by white people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Brooklyn section, they were thrown up by money people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nothing to have 3.5-4 houses per acre.
Mm-hmm.
With 18 inches between them. No electricity, no plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say this, and I hope you don't use it, but the point is that black people smell differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because they simply didn't have the facilities.
Mm-hmm.
to remain clean.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know where Sugar Creek is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the outhouses were built over Sugar Creek.
Okay.
And from Central High, which is right by on the other side of Sugar Creek,
mm-hmm.
we could you just watch them going into the outhouses.
So the outhouses actually sat in, or they emptied into Sugar Creek?
Yes, sir.
Direct. Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We realized we were having a lot of trouble down in that particular section, and the white officers didn't really like to go down there. They would go, you know, because it was their duty.
Why didn't they like to go?
They were scared.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the chief of police went to the city council. This was before my time.
Mm-hmm.
And asked permission to hire some black. We didn't have any black officers.
Mm-hmm.
And the restricted duty was that they could arrest black people, but they couldn't arrest white people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, that was not said, but they were told very clearly, you don't arrest white people.
Mm-hmm.
But they had their hands full, you know, McDowell and Blue Heaven on Friday and Saturday night when people got paid.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of shootings. There were a lot of cuttings. We had a hospital. It was called Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
That was dedicated just to the black people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say this is a matter of fact, because I don't know it as a matter of fact. But for some reason, at that time, there was an awful lot of cuttings.
Hmm.
And they would just take them over to the Good Samaritan, and the duty surgeon would just quip someone. I mean, just take one string of surgical cord.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep going, just like you were sewing up, you know, and consequently the scarring was, in some cases, just horrendous.
Really?
But as long as that was there, and as long as they had a lock on the business, they could do what they wanted to.
That's who had a lock on the business?
The black.
Oh, okay.
Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Because white doctors didn't go in there.
Okay.
There were, again, like I say, a lot of shootings. And
did the white officers go into Brooklyn after they hired the black police officers?
They would go in, but they didn't choose to go in. They were sent in.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go in with black officers.
Mm-hmm.
And felt much more protected than they would have just by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember black officers, I mean white officers, being attacked or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just the environment, you know, they just didn't want to be there. So,
do you remember any other comments from the white officers about what was going on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could read the paper and know what was going on. And you knew very well, you know, that there were a lot of gambling. They played this tunk. That's the name of the game. They played numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a bit of that. And there were shootings over a quarter.
Hmm.
I mean, just you wouldn't believe it. But it's a fact. I had a boy working for me that was an excellent tile setter. And a guy beat him out of a quarter, and he shot him five times.
Is that right? And what did he do for you again?
Set tile.
Oh, okay.
He was a tile setter, making at the time $4 an hour, which was, his helper made $1.25. That was the difference in his position.
Wow.
And
what do you think made them do that?
If I say ignorance, it's a matter of possession. When you grow up without anything,
mm-hmm.
you guard every nickel you got.
True.
And you never know if it's going to be your last nickel.
True.
They just, nowadays, they have all kind of laws to protect them,
mm-hmm.
equal opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and things like this. And I strongly support that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because a lot of the landlords that own their property, they didn't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They would go down and collect the $2 a week per house
mm-hmm.
rent. And there was no expense other than taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was maybe $2.
Yeah.
And if you owned 100 houses, then you took in $400, $200 a week. Hey, man, that's a good return.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were painted.
Who were some of the owners?
Well, that was hidden in the States.
Well, I mean, not so much by name, but by profession.
The people in Myers Park.
Okay.
They built Cherryville. They call it Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
To accommodate themselves, having their maids, chauffeurs living there.
Oh. Okay.
That were a lot closer to them. But boy, when the sun went down, they were home.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So they built these neighborhoods for their, like, maids and other folks who worked for them?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the ones along Sugar Creek, they were just property owners there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, when you came on in 61, where would you consider the urban renewal process by that time?
Just getting started.
Just getting started.
Yeah. I told you that we went down and watched the bulldozers work, and somebody suggested they save a tree, and it was so infested with bugs that he said you'd start an epidemic
mm-hmm.
if you took it out of there. So everything was burned
mm-hmm.
right in place. I mean it was knocked down and piled up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we cleared the property. We made absolutely sure that every household had an upgraded, better home to move to
mm-hmm.
that they could afford.
Mm-hmm.
Went out of the way to do everything we possibly could to be fair and to make it, well, more than fair. You know, we took tax money
mm-hmm.
and assisted most of these people. And to hear people say that we took their heritage and things like this when we destroyed that facility.
Mm-hmm.
I have gone to some homes during campaign, and the termites flew when I was in the house.
Really?
And Bishop Dale was this particular person's name. And he just went in the kitchen and got a broom and came in, and as he was talking to me, he started sweeping. And he swept up, I'm going to say 5 gallons of these flying bugs.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just as normal as anything could be. I didn't say anything.
You know? Mm-hmm.
But that was every time you saw Bishop, he had on a crisp collar,
mm-hmm.
Addressed immaculately.
Mm-hmm.
I lost the word. Anyway, immaculately.
That's right.
Okay. And it was the same suit.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't go around like a bum. He you know, was most presentable.
Mm-hmm. So you went into Brooklyn during, like, campaigning time?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We would hold meetings with the labor unions, Reginald Hawkins, people like him.
Mm-hmm. What was he like?
Oh, he was probably the worst one there.
Really?
He was all mouth.
Mm-hmm. What exactly did he do?
He was a dentist.
Okay. And where did he live?
He lived over there, and if I tell you it's wrong, don't hold
okay,
me to
sure.
it, but off of Statesville
mm-hmm.
Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met with him, it was usually in over on Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was a labor union hall,
mm-hmm.
and he was usually there with the labor representatives.
And he worked with the labor union?
I don't know. I can't mm-hmm. tell you that. I just know that they were associated somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And the labor unions would support you, you know,
mm-hmm.
or either they would put out a ticket that they approved this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in no position to support them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to give them anything.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow or another, I always made their ticket.
Okay. So what was Reginald Hawkins like again? I don't know much about him.
He was just a firecracker.
Mm-hmm.
He would be with one of the ones that was standing there all mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still that way today, if you listen to him. I mean, he's 80 years old, I think. But he had a small following, so you put up with it.
Mm-hmm. What did he complain about, mainly?
Equality.
Mm-hmm.
Job. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And without hesitating, he was wholly justified. But you don't get things demanding them,
mm-hmm.
you know. You just accomplish a lot more. When Fred Alexander, who was the first black elected official in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
came on the council, he was most gracious.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized, hey, I've come a long way. I'm here. I want to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And he later became a senator.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very intelligent. Knew when to push and when not to push, as any politician learns quickly, you know. So
what did Reginald Hawkins have to say about Brooklyn?
Nothing.
Really?
No.
Why do you think he didn't say anything about Brooklyn?
I don't know that he was asked.
Oh, okay.
He was more in the ticket approval category. Mm. Not very many people said anything but nice things about Brooklyn, meaning it's good to get rid of it, because they knew what it was. They knew the filth, the problems, the people living that close together, and on a hot summer night, attitudes weren't the best, and there were a lot of problems down there.
Yeah. Do you think the main motivation for what happened in Brooklyn was because of the conditions or because of the urban renewal planning movement?
Oh, conditions.
Conditions.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It was just wonderful that we had a tool to utilize to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You see, a city is like a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It starts deteriorating in the center,
mm-hmm.
and slowly spreads out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the, you know, the way it was done back then, the whole perimeter of downtown was all black families.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's not quite as noticeable because they've intermingled in the residential, you know, part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
But for a while, it was just this ring right around downtown, and some of the homes were white inhabited, and the people had moved, and the black people came in there.
Mm-hmm.
Some were, as I told you, these shacks, and they were the ones that went first. There was a blessing for urban renewal. I don't know what the city would have done, because we could have never done it without federal money.
Mm-hmm. Did you get any negative sentiment from the community at all?
No.
None?
None. Hey, man, I'm going to take you out of this dump, and I'm going to put you in this house over here. Not me personally.
Sure,
I mean the system.
I understand what you're saying.
And you going to complain?
Yeah. What? How did the process work of relocating folks?
People like Vernon Sawyer,
mm-hmm.
they would hold these meetings for block meetings. This one's going to be destroyed. You know, we're going to move y'all out, place you. And he had a lot of help, a lot of assistance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they would do until it was empty. And that's when you turn the bulldozers loose.
Mm-hmm. Did any folks from the Brooklyn neighborhood own any property in Brooklyn at all?
No.
Not at all.
As a matter of fact, we had to condemn quite a bit of it because it was so entangled in the states that we couldn't rightfully find the owner. So we would deposit money with the court, you know, based on a negotiated value, and then let them straighten it out and find the rightful owner and pay them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we waited until we could clear all the deeds, we never would have gotten out of there.
True.
This is where the benefit of condemnation comes in.
When exactly did that come about? I think I remember reading that it took certain steps to set it up so you could actually condemn property. Was that why you were in city council that they were?
Oh, long before I was there.
Long before you were there.
See, you have to condemn property for roads, for schools, for things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had the right to condemn property for years and years.
Okay.
We just utilized it, you know, in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't a new or a given light or whatever.
I understand. Did the, even though people in the didn't own property, were they given any opportunity to buy it at all?
No. How are you going to give them, because you're going to destroy the land. And the land lay vacant for several years because of the bugs and stuff.
Yeah.
No, they weren't asked whether they wanted to buy it or not. And I do not remember one that said he wanted or she said they wanted to buy it. For the reasons I just said.
Do you think that moving the folks from that Brooklyn neighborhood to other areas just basically move the problem of poverty from one place to another?
To a certain extent, you do. Some neighborhoods are not as well maintained, but the majority of Afro-Americans took advantage of that to improve themselves. And have done that. And the standard of living, let's get back to basic things like baths and things like that, you know. If you can't bathe, you don't have a lot of respect, self-respect. But when you move into a house that's got a bath and hot and cold water, you can take a shower and be clean. Hey man, that goes a long way. That does an awful lot to you, to the self-esteem, my self-esteem anyway.
What do you think, or what would you consider the best outcome for Charlotte in terms of urban renewal was? What do you think it did for Charlotte?
We got rid of the cancer that was around the perimeter. We were able to take advantage of the situation, and it aided us, assisted us in integration.
In what way?
Well, it was all going on at the same time. We had to move some of the families into mainly white or neighborhoods and things like that. As the neighborhoods got used to the fact, of course, they objected in the beginning.
Yeah.
So they got used to it and say, hey, these are people just like we are, you know. And,
did you hear a lot of negative comments from folks as a city council member about that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say a lot.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't listen to it. The job had to be done. And, come, let me take you by the hand and take you down there. And then you tell me that they don't have the right to be where they are.
What about issues of public housing during that time?
Well, I haven't been, Piedmont Court, Southside. I'm just not real strong in favor of those areas because I think you can do a lot better job by having anywhere from 15 to 20 units just scattered around because you just sour a neighborhood by putting them in there, because they're going to attract not the best of society. Even, in situations that, they tell stories, they say they're not working, and they got a job, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you got that type person. Well, they're not going to go out and clean the yard, sweep the porch, and that kind of thing. They're just not going to do it. And the net result is you just see the degrading of the property.
Do you think that using house codes to clean up those slums might have been an alternative to exercising eminent domain, or was it too far gone? Or
too far gone.
Too far gone.
There's nothing you could do in Brooklyn proper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have torn down 3 out of every 4 houses.
Mm-hmm.
And then torn the 4th one down and rebuilt on that property. And then you would have contaminated soil and everything else.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare Brooklyn to the other parts of slum clearance during that time?
Brooklyn was a mess.
Was the worst?
Was by far the worst. And let's go back to outhouses and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you house people this close together, 18 inches apart, and don't give them electricity or plumbing. What are you going to have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would you consider the urban renewal movement an extreme success?
Extreme success. The reason I say that is like I said before, we couldn't have done the job that we did with just ad valorem tax.
Mm-hmm.
We had to have that subsistence from Raleigh,
mm-hmm.
from Washington,
mm-hmm.
to be able to do it. It's just too expensive.
Yeah. Was there any city council member who, maybe it was their brainchild early on, maybe even did you hear of whose brainchild it was from even before you came on the council?
No, it was the city manager that was the driving force, I would say, in the beginning.
Was that before Bill Veeder?
No, Bill Veeder himself.
Bill Veeder himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of pushed it.
Well, he just made it available to us.
As an option?
Yeah, he worked for the council.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't going to push anything.
Exactly.
He was just going to say, well, this is available and this is available and we've got these problems and I think this will, you know, help us out here and mm-hmm. go on from there. He was a terrific city manager.
Really? I just spoke with him earlier today.
Did you?
Yeah, I did actually. And he was glad to hear about the other folks I've been talking to about the project. And Don Bryant actually mentioned Bill Veeder. That's how I actually got his name.
Mm-hmm.
And was discussing how Bill Veeder actually went into the community at various points to talk to folks.
Right.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say.
About Don or the...
Oh, yeah. Veeder. I was called, I don't know, after Bill had left his job, city manager.
Mm-hmm.
I was called by some political bigwigs, and they said, who do you think we ought to run for the Senate?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Bill Veeder.
Really?
I don't think you could find a more qualified person. And well, nothing ever came of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Was that maybe because he didn't want to run for...
I really don't know.
What was it about him, just... Anything in particular about him?
Yeah, he was low-key,
mm-hmm.
didn't talk a lot,
mm-hmm.
and when he talked, he knew what he was saying.
Mm.
Well qualified.
Did you have anybody on, I don't guess you had anybody on the council that was against the urban renewal plan other than Don, Mr. Bryant?
No, that's all.
Yeah. What were some of the conversations at the time with Don about that?
None. You don't gain anything when you're talking to yourself.
No. Yeah. And I wondered about that too.
Yeah, we knew what had to be done.
Yeah.
Well,
talk to me about Mayor Brookshire.
I didn't like him.
Really?
What
was there? Was anything in particular you didn't like?
He's just a little guy.
Really?
I gave a council member one time. I'm in the chemical business.
Uh huh.
I gave him bottles of shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that we gave away, you know, it was Prel. It was the same formula as Prel.
Mm-hmm.
And they just loved it, you know. And I gave him a bottle. And he gave it back. He said, I don't do my own hair.
Oh, my God.
And I said, very well. And I turned around and Sandy Jordan said, I'll take it. I do mine, you know.
Yeah. Well, he meant he didn't wash his own hair?
He didn't wash his own hair.
Oh, my goodness.
And, that, you know, that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
One time, he prepared an ordinance, directed the city attorney, who works for the city council, to prepare an ordinance to close the parks at 10 o'clock. And when we got to the council meeting, he was sitting on at my desk on the chair, you know, all in ordinance form. And I asked the attorney, I said, who told you to do this? And he said, the mayor. And I let it go, you know. I said, you don't work for the mayor. The next time he tells you to do something, you come and get permission to do it. Because this way is the best way to lose power.
Which way?
Allow things like this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't protect your strengths,
mm-hmm.
you just aren't going to have it.
Mm-hmm.
We had a situation where they wanted to pass a blue law.
Yeah, Mr. Bryant mentioned that.
And I just fought it vehemently. If you'd read the law, you'd have just seen how stupid it was.
Really?
I mean, you could do this, but you couldn't do this, you know.
Yeah.
I said, if you want to close everything down, I'll go along with it. But I'm not going to. You can sell houses, but you can't sell fixtures.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the dumbest thing. And I told Jim Whittington and Don Bryant both, I said, you people do business on Sunday. You're not affected by this, but you're closing up other companies. So they went ahead and passed the law. And there was a guy named Stanley, a Stanley drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
He got an injunction against it, and it wouldn't get into effect. It wouldn't go into effect. So I finally called him up, and I said, please drop your injunction. Let it go into effect, and we'll beat it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, only you and Jim Whittington voted against it. And I said, well, you do what I said to you. So he did. People started to call in those councils. Women couldn't buy Kotex. Now, you're talking about a bunch of bad people.
Mm-hmm.
So Eckerd's put out a list of the people and their telephone number at work and home.
Oh, my Lord.
That voted for it. They couldn't sleep for a week. Honest to goodness, they were just hounded. And the only way they could get an hour's sleep is to take the phone off the hook. And just things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Childish.
Yeah.
Governing.
Well, tell me how the bidding process worked on Brooklyn property with individual businessmen or businesses.
It was divided into tracts.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it sat empty
mm-hmm.
for a long time. People just couldn't foresee the development.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to actually persuade some people, you know, come on, help us out. We've cleared all this land down here and take it over and develop some stuff.
So you actually had to encourage folks to do it?
Yes, yes.
Hmm. How long did it take to get that up and rolling? Do you remember who the first was to do that?
I have no idea.
Really?
I'm going to say 10 years before it was ever materialized to any degree, mm-hmm. you know.
Was that in Brooklyn or just overall?
The overall area there,
mm-hmm.
The Brooklyn area.
Mm-hmm. So, but you never got any, the folks in the Brooklyn community, I know you said that they were pleased to be moving, but nobody spoke up at all in favor of, I don't know what they would have spoke up in favor of, but spoke up in favor of trying to keep the neighborhood or do anything, another alternative or anything?
Let me say this.
Mm-hmm.
If they did, I never heard them.
Okay.
And I was as close as anybody could be.
Sure.
I have heard in the last 4 or 5 years some people saying, y'all robbed us of our heritage, et cetera. These are young people who weren't even going to school at that time.
So these weren't people, these aren't people who are in there that are, you know, older
no,
now?
No. These are the young people who look back and are looking for, I guess, things to cry about.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't hear anybody at the time want to purchase, want to stay there, or anything else they want to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue of eminent domain, Mr. Short mentioned that. Is eminent domain, would you consider it ethical?
Oh, yeah. You couldn't have a city.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't. If we were in the county, it wouldn't be necessary to do all this.
Okay.